of the prophecy of Joel. We are now in session two in our study of this great prophecy, the prophecy that we have called the prophecy of the prophet and the prostitute, or the holy man and the harlot. You may remember that last week we said that the nation of Israel had been divided into two sections. There was the northern kingdom of Israel and the southern kingdom of Judah. Originally, it was all one nation, ruled by Saul, David, and Solomon. Following the reign of King Solomon, there was a rebellion, and the northern 10 tribes drew from the 12 tribe union, and they formed their own kingdom called Israel. There was also a kingdom to the south called Judah, with Jerusalem as its capital. Now Hosea is prophesying to this northern kingdom of Israel in its last days. He sees this northern kingdom go from relative prosperity to absolute anarchy. He is prophesying concerning this northern kingdom of Israel. We can see a little bit about the duration of this man's prophecy by looking, or this time of his ministry, by looking at this table of kings. In Hosea chapter 1, verse 1, we find that Hosea prophesied during the reigns of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah. Now you can see the last date for Uzziah is 739 B.C., and the earliest date for Hezekiah is 715 B.C. Furthermore, he prophesied during the reign of Jeroboam II, and the latest that we have here is 753 B.C. So we see that he has to prophesy between these two dates, 753 B.C. and 715 B.C. So he must have had a ministry of some 50 years, a very long time. Furthermore, we notice that the reign was during a time of anarchy when king was throwing off king. Now, if you may remember, the southern kingdom, that is the kingdom of Judah, had only one line of kings. Who was the one line of kings that ruled over Judah except for Saul? Who was the one line? What line? What was the king that started the line? David, that's right. Whereas in the northern kingdom, you have nine different dynasties, nine different families that reigned. Jeroboam was the first. And then we go through these, and we finally come to this time, and we find that here is where Hosea starts to rule. It is during the dynasty of Jehu. This is going to become important tonight. Jehu, Jehoahaz, Joash, Jeroboam, and Zechariah formed this dynasty. Then Shalom killed Zechariah, and he in turn was killed by Menahem. Pekah killed Pekahiah, and Hosea murdered Pekah. Some of these reigned only 1 month or 6 months, very brief reigns. And we have something of the viewpoint of the turnover and the absolute uncertainty of the time in which Hosea prophesied. Furthermore, we saw that internationally there were two great powers. Israel was torn between Assyria to the northeast and Egypt to the southwest. There were some who said, let's make an alliance with Egypt in order to stand against Assyria. Others said, no, let's make an alliance against Assyria to stand against Egypt. And so they were like a bird, not knowing where it was going to go, deciding which kingdom should be their ally. Spiritually, the nation was filled with idolatry. There were false priests. There were false religious centers, and so on. The style of Hosea is like Jeremiah. He has been called the weeping prophet of the north. Jeremiah is the weeping prophet of the south. Jeremiah was later, about 150 years later. He is the weeping prophet to the south. But his style is something like Jeremiah's. He has been called the prophet of the prodigal son in the north, and this is true. Now, in the book itself, we saw that there are two main sections. One is the personal experience of the prophet, and the second is the prophetic exhortation. The first three chapters deal with Hosea's married life and his family. The last chapters 4 through 14, deal with the prophecy itself. we shall spend our primary time on the personal experience of Hosea, and then we shall summarize more of the prophecy in chapters 4 through 14. The first three chapters, the prodigal wife. Chapters 4 through 14, the prodigal nation. Last week, we looked at this first section, the first three verses. Roman number 1, the personal experience, the prodigal wife, 1:1 to 3:5. The symbolic family, chapter 1:1 to 2:1. The two signs. Last time, we looked at the sign of Gomer. Tonight, we look at the sign of the children, and this is most interesting as we see the sign of the children in Hosea 1:4 to 2:1. So if you will, turn to the sign of the children in Hosea chapter 1, verses 4 through 9. There are three children, and each one of these children become a sign. So let's look at the first child, verses 4 through 5, the sign of Jezreel, the son, verses 4 and 5. Remember now, he has married a prostitute, and from this union there comes a child, verse 4. And the Lord said unto him, call his name Jezreel, for yet a little while, and I will avenge the blood of Jezreel upon the house of Jehu, and will cause to cease the kingdom of the house of Israel. So there's a child born, and God says, call that the name of that child Jezreel. Why Jezreel, God? God, why do you want me to name that baby Jezreel? The name means God sows or God scatters. Why name him God scatters? Well, there is the answer is given right here, verse 4. Yet a little while, and I will avenge the blood of Jezreel upon the house of Jehu. Now, let me explain, if I may, very briefly, what this is saying, and then we look at the scriptures very briefly. Remember, we said now that Hosea is prophesying during the reign of the dynasty of Jehu. Jehu is the first one. He murdered Jehoram in order to become king. And then his descendants, in order, were Jehoahaz, Joash, and Jeroboam. And it's during the reign of Jeroboam that Hosea is prophesying. And Hosea is saying, call the name of that child Jezreel, because we're going to avenge the blood of Jezreel on the house of Jehu, primarily, of course, as it will come on Zechariah later on, for Zechariah is the one who's going to be murdered and cut off. But it's going to be the blood of Jezreel on this whole dynasty. Now, why the blood of Jezreel? Well, the blood of Jezreel is involved here because Jehoram was killed at Jezreel. Jezebel, the wife of Ahab, was killed by Jehu at Jezreel. 70 sons had their heads sent to Jezreel by Jehu. Jezreel was a bloody spot, and Jehu was the one who shed all that blood at Jezreel. Now let's look at 2 Kings to pick out just a couple of instances of this. Turn, if you will, to 2 Kings chapter 9. 2 Kings. That's in your Old Testament. 2 Kings chapter 9. 2 Kings chapter 9. Verse 24. 2 Kings chapter 9, verse 24. And Jehu drew a bow with his full strength and smote Joram between his arms, and the arrow went out at his heart, and he sank down into his chariot. Then said Jehu to Bidkar, his captain, take up and cast him in the portion of the field of Naboth the Jezreelite. They're right in the environs of Jezreel. For remember how that when I and thou rode together after Ahab his father, the Lord laid this burden upon him, and so on. That's the blood of Jehoram, either way, spelled the same way. Now down to verse 30. And when Jehu was come to Jezreel, Jezebel heard of it, and she painted her face and attired her head and looked out through a window. And as Jehu entered in at the gate, she said, had Zimri peace who slew his master? And he lifted up his face to the window and said, who is on my side? Who? And there looked out at him two or three eunuchs. And he said, throw her down. So they threw her down, and some of her blood was sprinkled on the wall and on the horses, and he trod her underfoot.
And when he was come in, he did eat and drink, and said, Go see now this cursed woman, and bury her, for she is a king's daughter. And they went to bury her, but they found no more of her than the skull and the feet and the palms of her hands. Wherefore they came again and told him, and he said, This is the word of the Lord which he spoke by his servant Elijah the Tishbite, saying, In the portion of Jezreel shall dogs eat the flesh of Jezebel. Pretty bloody, isn't it, so far? All right, now let's move on. Chapter 10, verse 1. And Ahab had 70 sons in Samaria. And Jehu wrote letters and sent to Samaria unto the rulers of Jezreel, to the elders and to those who brought up Ahab's children. Now, verse 7. And it came to pass, when the letter came to them, that they took the king's sons and slew 70 persons and put their heads in baskets and sent them to him to Jezreel. Pretty bloody, isn't it? Now, what Hosea is saying is, call his name Jezreel. Call the baby's name Jezreel, because God is going to avenge all that blood on the house of Jehu. Jeroboam is ruling now, but eventually all that blood is going to come on the house of, did I say the house of Jehu? Yes, on the house of Jehu. It will come on the house of Jehu. Now, when I look at Hosea chapter 1, I get the impression that Jehu should not have shed all this blood. Don't you? Don't you get the impression it was wrong for Jehu to shed all this blood? Look at it. Hosea 1:4, And the Lord said unto him, Call his name Jezreel, for yet a little while, and I will avenge the blood of Jezreel upon the house of Jehu. Well, keep your finger in Hosea and turn back to 2 Kings 10, verse 30. After he had shed all this blood, he killed Joram, or Jehoram, if you'd like to call him this. He killed Jezebel. He killed the 70 sons of Jehoram. Look at verse 30. And the Lord said unto Jehu, Oh, by the way, he also killed I don't know how many priests of Baal in a terrible massacre of the priests of Baal. I should say an awesome, not a terrible, but an awesome massacre of the priests of Baal. Verse 30. And the Lord said unto Jehu, Because thou hast done well in executing that which is right in mine eyes, and hast done at the house of Ahab according to all that was in mine heart, thy children of the fourth generation shall sit on the throne of Israel. So we read, You've done well, Jehu, because you've done well, your children to the fourth generation shall sit on the throne. Jehu, Jehoash 1, Joash 2, Jeroboam 3, Zechariah 4. Because you've done well, your children shall sit unto the fourth generation. Now, how do you reconcile that? In 2 Kings 10, verse 30, you did a good thing. Hosea chapter 1, verse 4, I'm going to avenge the blood of Jezreel on you. How do you explain that? Well, look at 2 Kings 10, verse 31. But Jehu took no heed to walk in the law of the Lord God of Israel with all his heart, for he departed not from the sins of Jeroboam, who made Israel to sin. What did Jeroboam do? Well, let's go back to our math again. Jeroboam was the first king of this northern kingdom. After there was the split from the southern kingdom, Jeroboam the first was the first king of this northern kingdom. Now, he was concerned because the people were still going down to Jerusalem to worship. And he didn't want his people going down to Jerusalem in the southern kingdom to worship. So he established his own priesthood, false priests who were not of Levi or Aaron. He established his own centers of worship at Bethel and Samaria. He had idol worship in the form of oxen and calves, and caused the people to say, This is our God, in the form of these calves. And so that he had false worship. Now, Jehu followed in the same sin. The only reason he killed the predecessors was because he wanted to be on the throne. The only reason he killed the priests of Baal, because he didn't want anybody to remember Ahab. He wanted to be the king by himself, and so he followed in the sins of the first king of Israel. He didn't have a correct priesthood. He didn't discourage the people from worshiping at Bethel. He still had the ox and the calves, and so he followed in those sins. So that his motives were wrong. God wanted the house of Ahab destroyed because it was a wicked house. He wanted all these people destroyed, Omri, Ahab, Ahaziah, and so on. He wanted those destroyed.
But he didn't want to destroy just to have another man who was an idolater put on the throne. So he was in sympathy with what Jehu did. He was not in sympathy with why he did it. And because he had the wrong motive in killing off this man Jehoram and all of his relatives and so on, and killing the priest of Baal, because he had the wrong motive in doing this, God said, all right, I'm going to avenge the blood of Jezreel upon your house. But there's more in this prophecy. Look at it carefully. Let's go back to Hosea chapter 1 now. Hosea chapter 1. There are two judgments. The first judgment is on Jehu. Now, Hosea chapter 1, verse 4. And the Lord said unto him, call his name Jezreel, for yet a little while, and I will avenge the blood of Jezreel upon the house of Jehu. There is the first judgment. Now comes the second. And I will cause to cease the kingdom of the house of Israel. And it shall come to pass at that day, I will break the bow of Israel in the valley of Jezreel. Now, where is Jezreel? Well, Jezreel is a huge plain located just about here, right in the central part of Israel. Jezreel is right here. And he says, not only will Jezreel stand for the blood of Jezreel to be avenged on the house of Jehu, but Jezreel is going to stand for a fatal battle. Israel is going to have a fatal battle in Jezreel when the Assyrians from up here come down and they will defeat the armies of Israel at Jezreel and carry them away captive. And this came to pass in 2 Kings 17. In 2 Kings 17, the Assyrians come down and they just overrun Israel. They pick up all the people and captivate them and distribute them throughout the whole Near East. Babylon, Media Persia, they distribute them throughout and scatter them throughout the whole Near East. This is what we refer to the lost 10 tribes of Israel. These 10 tribes were scattered throughout the Near East. And the Assyrians in turn came and brought in Gentiles. And they intermarried, and that's where the Samaritans came from. That's why the Jews to the south hated the Samaritans. Because the Assyrians brought in Gentiles, the Gentiles intermarried with the Israelites that were left, and presto, you have Samaritans. And the pure blooded Jews to the south despise those Samaritans with their false religion. That's why the woman at the well says, we worship God in this mountain. Well, that was the wrong place. Salvation is of the Jews, Jesus Christ said, and so on. So that we find that this word Jezreel stands for this fatal battleground where the Assyrians came down and destroyed the Jews. I must say that 2 Kings 17 does not say it took place at Jezreel, just as they destroyed them. But we can assume from the prophecy of Hosea that that is where it took place. So we find that Hosea has three children. The number one son is called Jezreel, and that stands for two things, judgment on the house of Jehu and judgment on Israel. Now let's go to the second son. The second child, we shouldn't say son. The second child. Lo Ruhamah, the daughter, verses 6 and 7. And she conceived again and bore a daughter. And God said unto him, call her name Lo Ruhamah, for I will no more have mercy upon the house of Israel, but I will utterly take them away. But I will have mercy upon the house of Judah, and will save them by the Lord their God, and will not save them by bow, nor by sword, nor by battle, by horses, nor by horsemen. So she conceived again and bore a child, and this child was a daughter. Now I want you to notice something. Look at the wording in verse 6 and compare that with the wording in verse 3. In verse 6, and she conceived again and bore a daughter. Verse 3, so he went and took Gomer, the daughter of Diblaim, who conceived and bore him a son. Did you notice? Verse 3, she bore him. In verse 6, it just says she bore a child. Now, the implication seems to be that the first child was born legitimately. It would seem that the second child was born from an unfaithful, illicit relationship. And if this be so, it certainly does show the love of Hosea for this woman. And it magnifies the picture of God's love for us. Evidently, the child was born from an illicit relationship.
But God said, call the name of that girl, Lo Ruhamah. Teenagers, how would you like to have a name like that? Lo Ruhamah. Well, Lo Ruhamah means not having mercy or not pity. Call the child not pity. Call the child not having mercy. Why? Well, verse 6 explains. Call her name Lo Ruhamah, for I will no more have mercy upon the house of Israel, but I will utterly take them away. So this little girl comes out. They say, what's the name of your daughter? Lo Ruhamah. Not pity. Why do you call the child not pity? Because God said, I'm not going to have pity on the northern kingdom anymore. I'm going to let them go away. But on the other hand, Judah, I'm going to spare. That's what verse 7 says. But I will have mercy upon the house of Judah, and will save them by the Lord their God, and will not save them by bow, nor by sword, nor by battle, by horses, nor by horsemen. Now, when the Assyrians came down, they just swept across this northern kingdom, and they came right down into Judah, up to the gates of Jerusalem. And Sennacherib, remember how Sennacherib stood before the gates of Jerusalem and just defied the God of Israel? And in one night, God miraculously destroyed 185,000 of the Assyrian soldiers. Remember, this is the place where it says, and when they awoke, they found that they were all dead men. That is, the Israelites went out and they found 185,000 dead Assyrians. And the Assyrians had to go back home. And this is what verse 7 is talking about. I will have mercy upon the house of Judah and will save them by the Lord their God and will not save them by bow, nor by sword, nor by battle, by horses, nor by horsemen. The same army that destroyed the northern kingdom was in turn miraculously destroyed by God in the southern kingdom. Lo Ruhamah, not mercy on the northern kingdom, but mercy on the southern kingdom. Well, there's a third child. The third child is given in verse 8. It's a son. We call this number three child, Lo Ami. Verses 8 and 9. Now, when she had weaned Lo Ruhamah, she conceived and bore a son. Again, it doesn't say she bore him a son. It just says she bore a son. Then said God, call his name Lo Ami, for ye are not my people, and I will not be your God. Lo Ami means not my people. And so the third child would be called Lo Ami. So Hosea would go out and say, well, I've got a son. My wife bore a son. Well, what did you name him? Lo Ami. Lo Ami. Why did you name him Lo Ami? That means not my people. What did you name him that for? Because God says, the northern kingdom will not be my people any longer. Israel will not be my people. Now, what a message of judgment in the names of these three sons. Jezreel. Blood upon the house of Jehu. Jezreel, the place where Israel is going to suffer a terrible defeat. Lo Ruhamah, not having mercy, not pity. And then this last one, Lo Ami, not my people. Well, I'm thankful that God's great work is not in judgment. God's great work is in salvation. And that's why we move on to the next section, where we have the deliverance, or the promise of restoration. You notice it in 1:10 to 2:1. The promise of restoration, 1:10 to 2:1. Yet the number of the children of Israel shall be like the sand of the sea, which cannot be measured nor numbered. And it shall come to pass that in the place where it was said unto them, ye are not my people, it shall be said unto them, you are the sons of the living God. Then shall the children of Judah and the children of Israel be gathered together and appoint themselves one head, and they shall come up out of the land, for great shall be the day of Jezreel. Say unto your brethren, Ami, and to your sisters, Ruhamah. Huh. This is great grace indeed. May I first of all, before we look at the names of the children, may I first of all just summarize all the promises that are given here. There are six great promises. Let me go through them in order. The first great promise is the promise of national increase in verse 10. Yet the number of the children of Israel shall be like the sand of the sea, which cannot be measured nor numbered. Great increase in the number of the Israelites. Secondly, there will be national conversion. Not only national increase, but national conversion. 10b. And it shall come to pass that in the place where it was said unto them, you are not my people, there it shall be said unto them, you are the sons of the living God. And here you have national conversion. A third promise is the promise of reunification. Chapter 1, verse 11. Then shall the children of Judah and the children of Israel be gathered together. The kingdom had been divided into the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom. But here's a promise where they will once again be reunited. There's a fourth promise. The promise of a sovereign king. Then shall the children of Judah and the children of Israel be gathered together and appoint themselves one head. Who is that one head? Huh? Jesus Christ. And you notice, they shall appoint themselves one head. The nation will turn to Jesus Christ and they will look on him as their Messiah. But it looks at one sovereign head. There's more. There's going to be a victorious army. Watch this one carefully. It's going to become very important in the book of Revelation. And they shall come up out of the land, for great shall be the day of Jezreel. Now when it says they shall come up out of the land, what does that mean? It means they shall come up out of the land as a victorious army. And great will be the day of Jezreel for them. Preceding this, the day of Jezreel was judgment. Now the day of Jezreel is victory. They shall come up out of the land as a victorious army, and Jezreel will mean victory and not defeat for them. There's more. The sixth blessing that God promises is restoration to divine favor. Chapter 2, verse 1. Say ye unto your brethren, Ami, and to your sisters, Ruhamah. Ami, what does that mean? Well, let's look at these names once again. Jezreel means God sows. It speaks of vengeance on the house of Jehu. It speaks of the place where Israel is going to be defeated by the people of Assyria. And it speaks of victory on their part in the future. Lo Ruhamah means not pity. Lo Ami means not my people. Now let's change this a bit. If you take the lo off, Ruhamah, lo in Hebrew means no or not. So you have Ruhamah, pity. Ami, the I at the end of a word in Hebrew means I or my. Actually, it means my. Like Malachi means my messenger. Ami, my people. So you have lo Ruhamah, not pity. Ruhamah, pity. Lo Ami, not my people. Ami, my people. So we have here, by use of this term, Jezreel, defeat turned to victory. Lo Ruhamah, not pitied, turned to pity. Lo Ami, not my people, turned to my people. Now let's go back to this Jezreel for just a minute. Can somebody give me another name for the valley or plain of Jezreel? Another name is Plain of Esdraelon. E-S-D-R-A-E-L-O-N. Esdraelon. Another name is Plain of Megiddo. The most common name is Armageddon. Now let's go back here. Hosea chapter 1, verse 11. Then shall the children of Judah and the children of Israel be gathered together and appoint themselves one head, and they shall come up out of the land, for great shall be the day of Armageddon. That's what it's talking about. It's predicting the time when Israel, under the headship of Jesus Christ, will stand against all the forces of Satan and the world and the Gentiles, and they will be victorious, and blood will flow to the depths of the bridle of a horse. Great will be the day of Jezreel. One day Jezreel meant ignominious defeat. Now it has come to mean in the prophecy of Hosea, glorious victory. But there's a lot more to it than this. Would you please turn in your Bibles now to 1 Peter chapter 2. 1 Peter chapter 2. If you want that Armageddon reference, you may just want to jot down Revelation 16, 16 in case you're taking notes. 1 Peter chapter 2. Let's take verses 9 and 10. 1 First Peter chapter 2, verse 9. But ye are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, and a holy nation, a people of his own, that you should show forth the praises of him who hath called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. 1 Peter 2:10. Who in time past were not a people, but are now the people of God, who had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy. Where did Peter get that? Huh? Well, it comes right out of the book of Hosea. We could put in verse 10, who in time past were lo ami, but are now ami. Who in time past lo ruhama, but are now ruhama. Does Peter mean that this prophecy of Hosea is fulfilled? He's not saying that. Because the prophecy of Hosea still has to be fulfilled in the future. That will not be fulfilled until the kingdom age when God gives birth to Israel. Until God calls Israel my people. That will take place in the kingdom age. But Peter is simply saying the same principle applies to us. Before, we weren't the people of God, but now we've become the people of God. Before, we had had mercy placed on us, but now God has placed his mercy on us. And he's simply taking in a principle. We call this principalization. He's taking the principle of Hosea and applying it to us today. Let's take another reference. Turn your Bibles to Romans, if you will, chapter 9. Romans chapter 9, the chapter on election. Or if you want to call it predestination, Romans chapter 9. Let's start with verse 23. And that he might make known the riches of his glory on the vessels of mercy, that is, he chooses some as the idea, he can make whatever he wants, that he might make known the riches of his glory on the vessels of mercy, which he had before prepared unto glory, even us, whom he hath called not of the Jews only, but also of the Gentiles. As he saith also in Hosea, I will call them my people who are not my people, and her beloved who is not beloved. And it shall come to pass that in the place where it was said unto them, ye are not my people, there shall they be called the sons of the living God. And what Paul is saying is this. God can have mercy on whomever he wants to have mercy. He can display his grace on whomever he wants to display his grace. And the proof of that is, I'll call people my people who were not people before. They were not my people, and now I call them my people. That's a proof of the fact, I show mercy on some. And these people had no pity showed on them, no mercy. Now I show mercy on them. And so that God shows his grace. He didn't have to choose anybody. But the very fact that he chose us, and he chose us before we chose him, he chose us indicates his great, great grace. And that's exactly what we have in the book of Hosea. Do you think that the Jews would turn to God apart from God's grace? I'll call them my people who are not my people, and I'll have mercy of them on whom I had not mercy before. Just like us, we weren't a people. We weren't the people of God, but God in his grace reached down, stooped down, and took us. We had no mercy extended towards us until God in his grace extended his mercy towards us. We can cry out Jezreel in victory. We can cry out Ruhama because we have obtained mercy. And we can cry out Ami because we have become in Jesus Christ the people of God. That's a great, great concept. Next week, tragedy of a deeper sort in the house of Hosea.